So what the U.S. is trying to do is they're trying to corner the global oil supply and force anyone who needs or wants to buy oil anywhere on the planet to do so in U.S. dollars and preserve the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency.
That's it.
You hear noise about China perhaps having a alternative to the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency. The U.S. won't stand for it. They will go to full thermonuclear war to prevent that from happening. The other thing that nobody realizes is when we let China into the WTO, we gave them carte blanche access to the entire patent portfolio held by the U.S. Patent Office. But they did a financial analysis of who controls the world's economy. And it comes down to 143 financial institutions with interlocking boards control 80% of the global commerce.
The scientists at LivePet are hard at work solving our cancer epidemic. They have the most promising cancer trials going on now with pet clinics around the country that I have ever seen. You can see the promising cancer research and trials going on some of the past shows that I've done. The links are below. While working with C60 and other ingredients, these talented scientists developed a hair growth serum that really works. They sat on it for years. After all, cancer is their focus. But they now realize how much the profits from this product could really help their cancer research. So the C360 Hair Growth product was launched. C360 Hair Growth is specifically designed to revive your hair growth by targeting hair follicles and restarting your hair growth cycle. C60, the active ingredient in C360 Hair Growth, reactivates hair follicles that have stalled due to hereditary hair loss, physical conditions, or environmental factors that may affect follicle production. You will begin to see visible results using C360 Hair Growth within 3 to 6 weeks. Buy today knowing that your future hair growth will help fund very promising cancer research. See more at the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This show, I have Mike Harris coming on, and he is just a brilliant geopolitical view of the world and studies all. He goes on to Press TV once a week and gives analysis on what's going on in the world. He writes articles. He ran for governor of Arizona in 2006, I believe, against McCain. And it was an interesting event that he had there. But he's coming on to talk about the coups going on all over the place. Venezuela, what's really behind that? He simplifies it. And he talks about the petrodollar and the global criminal cabal of international bankers. And then he talks about the coup that's going on against President Trump and what's behind that and what he thinks about President Trump. And then we get into a bunch of different topics. It's very interesting. It's a two-part show, and I hope you stick around. I split these up because if they get over an hour, it's a little too much for people. So I try to give you chunks that you can take in when you have time. And I want to tell you that he sticks around for my patrons and talks a little bit more about the assassination attempts against Trump. And then also where he sees the world going and some advice for people. It's a great little clip that he does, extra interview for my patrons. So I hope you go to that. I have the link below. But let's now get into my interview with Mike Harris. Mike, thank you so much for joining the show.
Well, Sarah, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on your show because I think it has an important role, and I think you reach the right type of listener out there. So it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's the goal, right, is to get good information out to people. There are coups going on, or at least attempted coups going on all over the place, one being in Venezuela. Can you speak to what's going on for real down there? I know it's a big quagmire and it's really hard to understand, but you can get to the core.
It's not. It's really simple to understand. The U.S. petrodollar is under assault. It's, the Russians, the Chinese, the Brazilians, South Africans, and India formed this competing financial system called BRICS. It's a direct competitor to the SWIFT system. Everyone is, many countries around there, because the U.S. has created so many new dollars in the last decade since the financial collapse of 2007 and 2008, which was engineered, that nobody has confidence that the dollar is going to retain its value. So they're looking for alternative methods. The other thing that's incumbent about the BRICS system is it eliminates the ability of the U.S. to impose financial sanctions on any other countries. Russia, you did this as a workaround. Iran's gonna buy into it. China's bought into it. The countries that are sanctioned now have an alternative financial system to use to avoid the SWIFT if those sanctions are imposed upon them. This is a good thing for the world. It's competition. Now, if the U.S. loses its global reserve currency status for the U.S. dollar, all of those dollars around the world are going to come back to the U.S., and the U.S. citizens are going to see hyperinflation. Foreigners are going to come in here and buy up real estate like there's no tomorrow, because it gives them something to hold on to whenever the value of the dollar is collapsing. So what the U.S. strategy has been with Venezuela, you look at who the top 10 oil producers in the world are. Number one, for the largest known reserves, is Venezuela. 303 million barrels, billion barrels reserve. It's a big, big number. They have the largest known reserve on the planet. Number two is Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is already in the U.S.'s back pocket. Number three is Canada. They're our neighbor to the north. They're not going anywhere. Number four is Iran. And you hear the saber rattling about Iran. It's about taking control of the Iranian oil fields and the Iranian oil assets. That's what this is all about. Number five is Iraq. We went in there and destroyed that country, destroyed those people in order to secure those assets. So what the U.S. is trying to do is they're trying to corner the global oil supply and force anyone who needs or wants to buy oil anywhere on the planet to do so in U.S. dollars, and preserve the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency. That's it. They see what the Russians and the Chinese, India, they're all doing with the BRICS system. They see it. They look at it as a potential leverage point against them. And so what they're trying to do is, by any means, hook or by crook, is to topple the Venezuelan regime. You have a guy like John Bolton say it's going to do the people of Venezuela good to have U.S. oil companies come in to develop these assets. You know you're in trouble. So that's the big game right there. It's all about protecting the U.S. dollar as the primary global reserve currency. Because right now, anybody who watches the financial news on an international basis, you hear noise about China perhaps having a alternative to the U.S. dollar as a global reserve currency. The U.S. won't stand for it. They will go to full thermonuclear war to prevent that from happening.
Because it's the end of our way of life.
It's not our way of life, because our way of life has been stripped from us already. This happened in the late 80s and 90s when George H.W. Bush drafted the legislation to put NAFTA, GATT, let China in the WTO. Bill Clinton signed it into law in 1998. Our way of life has been heading over to Asia for a long time. You know, China's got more millionaires than we do now. They have a bigger population. Our way of life is done. And
so what is the point? What's the goal?
Well, the point is if you go back to Karl Marx and you read Karl Marx, he said there's always a competition between capital and labor. You know, labor is what creates the value. Labor creates wealth. Capital wants to control the wealth. Capital doesn't like paying labor for what it's worth. They don't want to pay an American worker $18 an hour when they get a Chinese guy to do the same job for $3 a day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just what it comes down to. So the alternative here was deindustrialize the USA and export our manufacturing assets over to China. The other thing that nobody realizes is when we let China into the WTO, we gave them carte blanche access to the entire patent portfolio held by the U.S. Patent Office.
That's crazy. That's stupid.
Crazy. Yeah. We gave them 150 years worth of intellectual property for free. You know, it's just nuts. And you wonder why China went from being a bicycle-oriented transportation system to now they're building super trains and they have the Silk Road project. This was done because capital in the U.S. wanted to knock the American worker down, destroy the middle class, put us on the same global footing as people working in Cambodia or Bangladesh or China or anywhere else. But to get the U.S. worker down there so he's working for $3 and $4 a day, instead of 18 to 20 bucks an hour, which is what they're worth, because the American worker has been the most productive worker that's ever walked the face of the planet.
Businesses did that on their own, a lot of them. It didn't have to be crafted from above. Everybody wanted to save money on labor.
No, wait. There's a bigger picture here. Business did this.
With the world being so crazy, I have two great gift ideas to help you and your family stay safe. First, the Shockwave Torch. This tiny tool drops a 260-pound thug in 2 seconds. It packs so much power in such a small package, it's scary. Thank God it's got a safety on it. If you want to stay safe in a dangerous world, I promise the Shockwave Torch will help. You can also get, as an additional item, this combo pack. It's an ultra-powerful police-grade 18% pepper spray with an ultra-discreet 3-million-volt stun gun. I am getting these for every one of the women in my family. I believe we should all be carrying this for self-defense. And with gun laws becoming stricter than ever, what a great option for women in your family or even men in your family to be safe. With purchase of any other item, you can get this for only $29. So click the links below to find out more information.
There's a study out there. I think it's a Johns Hopkins study. But they did a financial analysis of who controls the world's economy. And it comes down to 143 financial institutions with interlocking boards control 80% of the global commerce. And that's where this comes from. That is what we're fighting here. Now, they're very strong, they're very powerful, but they also have a weakness. And their weakness is that they're so interdependent upon each other that if one domino falls, the chances are all of them will fall. And that's what we as a people have to do is knock down their house of cards. We have to start their dominoes falling.
And how do we do that? How do we do that? How do you identify? Is the BRIC system going to do that?
Well, the BRIC system is going to help. The thing I've been encouraging my Russian friends to do is, the U.S. has this power to sanction any country and sanction the companies that do business with any company. What needs to be done is the U.S. needs to be sanctioned by the rest of the world. And, the U.S. banks and the U.S. companies. So if you're a U.S. company and you're Caterpillar Tractor and you want to sell your bulldozers to Ghana says, no, we're not going to buy American bulldozers because you're on our sanction list. We're going to buy Komatsu bulldozers because they're not. And, there is a way to not do any financial transactions with the U.S., don't buy anything from the U.S., don't sell anything to the U.S., and break this stranglehold on the global economy that these 143 companies with interlocking boards all have. They're all financial institutions, by the way. So it's...
And it's hurting the average American citizen, right? Because let's get to that, because it sounds like, when we're talking here, it sounds like you're trying to take down the U.S., but in reality, you're trying to get free the U.S. from a group of people that are hurting the American people.
I want to free the U.S. from the international banking cartel. That is the greatest evil that exists on this planet. And Andrew Jackson was the last U.S. president to be successful at this. And if you look in Trump's office, to the right side, on his right-hand side, on the wall is a painting of Andrew Jackson. That is not by accident, folks. Trump gets it. Trump knows what he's doing. And, he's running into so much resistance on every front.
I can't even imagine. Coup. There's an ongoing coup to get rid of Trump. It's so obvious if you can't see it.
Absolutely. I'm surprised he survived alive this long. And the reason he has is because he hasn't been fully successful yet. But, I sent you a Press TV interview I did the other day about the coup in Venezuela. And one of the things the other guest mentioned was that, well, Trump's foreign policy is this. I said, no, this is not Trump's foreign policy. This is the foreign policy we have left over from George H.W. Bush. And that whole neocon that started up, during the Reagan years. And followed us through to 9/11 till the current day. This is the same foreign policy that's always been there since the 80s, and it's time to change this. George H.W. Bush is dead, that foreign policy should be dead as well. And we should go to something that is more transactional and far more cooperative with the rest of the world.
We need to evolve. So,
there's no need for us to spend $717 billion a year every year on defense. We spend, ten times more than the next five countries combined.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, and how many bases do we have around the world and everything else? Now, people say
986 is the last count I had about the bases we have. Yeah,
lots. And then there's some top secret ones too. So that doesn't. Your number's a little low, right?
Yeah, and the deep underground ones. Don't forget about those, because those are a reality, folks. Everything you've heard about that, it's real.
Yeah. Well, I knew in the 80s they had them, just even as early as that, and it probably was earlier than that, just because they started building them because of the nuclear. That was the narrative for the nuclear war in case they're, during the Cold War.
Let me give you a little history. You can read the work of Dr. Joseph Farrell. He's a very good researcher. He did a lot of research on Nazi Germany. And the origins of the underground bases came from Nazi Germany, from their secret programs, their weapons programs that they had there. When the U.S. went in there and they saw the extent of these bases and what the advantages that they brought them, they decided to emulate and copy that model. And so that's where that came from, at least according to Farrell. So I have to give him credit where credit is due.
Yeah, so I do know that they're all over the place. Now, people are saying that Trump is creating this foreign policy because he's placing people like John Bolton into position, who is a neocon. What would you say to that, to people who are, this isn't Trump's foreign policy, then why is he putting people like that in place?
Well, personally, I think he's out of his mind. I wouldn't let John Bolton be dog catcher. Honest to God, then make him shave that mustache. But I don't know why Trump has made some of the piss poor choices he had for people he surrounded himself with, his cabinet and other advisors. I don't get it. It makes no sense to me.
Because it makes it look like he's in on this or he's trading. He has to be somewhat. Go ahead.
Well, the rumor mill tells me that there's been a number of attempts on Trump's life. I think many of your listeners may have seen the video where Trump is giving a speech and there are four laser dots on his chest simultaneously while he was giving the speech, and the Secret Service panicked and ended the discussion. But there's been a number of things that have probably put the fear of God into Trump. Now, I don't know who is encouraging him to put these people in place. He got rid of Mattis. He got rid of Kelly. I kind of like those guys because they were close to the military. But, it's become evident to me, given what Trump has tried to do in Syria. He said, we're going to pull out of Syria. The next day, Bolton's on said, no, not so fast. We're going to take months and years to do this. That was nonsense. Now, I've been to Syria several times. I've met with the Syrian government. I met with their minister of justice and met with their minister of defense. I met with the military high command of the Syrian Arab Army. They have sought my advice with the group I was with, far smarter guys, more knowledgeable guys than I was with the Veterans Today crew. But we advised them at the time. This was in 2014, when the first time we advised them. It says, involve the Iranians and involve the Russians if you want to keep President Bashar Assad in power. And they did. And they've kept him in power. But whenever the U.S. is actually illegitimately in Syria. First of all, we have no declaration of war in the U.S. There is no U.N. mandate, and the Syrian government has not invited the U.S. in for any reason.
And didn't Obama have people vote on whether we should go in there? And it was over 90% of the people did not want to do this.
Well, nobody wants it. And Trump, it's one of the reasons I voted for him, was he said he was going to end these foreign entanglements. But he comes out and says publicly that we're going to withdraw from Syria. And then John Bolton and Mike Pompeo are out there the next day saying, oh, no, it's going to be a gradual withdrawal. We can't abandon our allies, the Kurds. The Kurds have been considered terrorists by the Turks for the last 25, 30 years. And suddenly we're concerned about this. This is suddenly our problem because
we just make up whatever, right?
They make up whatever.
And whatever to keep their thing going.
Well, the thing is, the U.S. Department of State I think is directed more out of Israel than it is out of the White House. Because you look at the Middle East theater in total, and it seems that Israel has a heavy influence on decisions that the U.S. makes and actions that the U.S. takes. You also heard Trump say he was going to withdraw from Afghanistan. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't pull half of our troops out. We can't do this. We can't do the other thing. Well, you have to look at this. And whenever the Taliban was in charge before 9/11, whenever the U.S. was at peace with Afghanistan, the Taliban had essentially eradicated opium production. Eradicated it. And so the U.S. Declares that Osama bin Laden, who had nothing to do with 9/11, was in Afghanistan, and they were supporting him and helping him, so we have to go in there and invade. Now, here we are 17 years later, and opium production is at a record high. It's over 10,000 metric tons per year.
Wasn't it at a record high within like 2 years of us taking over?
Immediately.
Yeah, it was really quick.
And it's grown ever since. And so what's happened, 17 years ago, we did not have an opioid crisis in the USA. So whoever these powers that be are, they're using the British model against China of the opium wars against our own citizens in the U.S.
Yeah, I thought about that. Yes, it's the same model.
We're propagating the use of opium to enrich certain people and to weaken elements within our own society, within our own culture.
Which is working, because over 100 million people are addicted.
Yeah, and 70,000 deaths per year. Well, I'll take your number on that. I don't have a number on it. I don't have a statistic.
Yeah, it's been like that for a while, yes.
But you look at this. All right, so we have a third of our population addicted to opioids. How effective are they going to be resisting any changes in our form of government if they are imposed upon us by, you know, these nameless, faceless bureaucrats who are ignoring our Constitution and trying to run this soft coup against Trump?
Well, we also have a human compromise problem and a trafficking problem, and we have like a complete decay of society going on. And anytime somebody wants to fix it in a meaningful way, nothing gets done. Or those people are actually, their whole careers are destroyed. I mean, I hear about person after person. I had interviews with Detective Rothstein, Jimmy Boots. And
yeah, I love that. He's a great guy.
Oh, he's great. And he talks about person after person being destroyed who tries to do something meaningful to help the human to help the human trafficking, to help the child welfare system, to do something that actually is, instead of little things. I mean, people can get little things done, but anything that's infrastructure wide that really can make a big difference, people's lives are destroyed.
Yep, that's the point. Is to see, the thing of it is, you don't have to control. Right, let's look at the Department of Justice. If there is anything that's been functioning against Trump, it should be obvious to even the casual viewer who's a liberal Democrat that the Department of Justice is not following the president, executive commander-in-chief's orders. In fact, they're in open disobedience to him. They're subordinate. And you look at how the whole Department of Justice from Rosenstein down at least three levels. So we've got the people. They've identified a number of them. A lot of them have left. But the point I'm trying to make here is that governmental department of the executive branch is not answerable to the commander in chief. Now, it's also not answerable to Congress, because whenever the Republicans were in charge and you had Representative Nunes, Gowdy, and others were saying, give us the documents. We want to see the 302s. We want to see the FISA documents. We want to see everything you've got on this case. And Department of Justice essentially said, no, we're not going to do it. And now Democrats are in charge, and they certainly don't want to advance that cause, because it's going to humiliate their party and Hillary Clinton. But this is open disobedience to the rule of law in the chain of command as set up constitutionally. And they're trying to make Trump out to be a crazy person. You heard Schumer's tweet today that he wants the director of national intelligence to file the paperwork to remove Trump. This is crazy land. I mean, it tells you that our entire government has been compromised and can no longer be trusted to do its job as articulated in the Constitution. They have betrayed the American people at every level.
It's extreme. Nancy Pelosi delaying the State of the Union?
Yeah.
We've never had that in the history of this country, have we?
Well, you know, who does that bitch think she is? I mean, somebody ought to take her up and slap her upside the head really hard and say, hey, what are you doing?
Who's compromising her? What the hell is going on? Exactly.
Well, the thing of it is, the people who are opposing Trump have been promised worldly riches and great power. And who knows what they've been promised? Who knows? But they're not serving the will of the American people. Now, it depends on what your opinion of government is. In my opinion, government is here to do the most good for the most people most efficiently. That's what government should do. It should help the people. It should be a benefactor of the people. It should help build the people up to be successful, provide a platform so that as a society and a culture, we can succeed, thrive, and go. Now, there's another school of thought, which goes back to feudalism times, where the people are here to serve. We are the aristocrats. You are the peasants. You're here to serve us. You will do what we say when we say it, or we'll kill you. And it appears that the age-old battle between us and them is back and has raised its ugly head once again, that the American dream is not as secure as we had hoped it was at one time, because they're working hard to undermine us.
Well, why are people so blind? It's so obvious that there's a coup going on. And whether you like them or not, you should be very disturbed by seeing a coup in action.
Well, half the people are below average. Okay? So we have a population of 330 million people. That means 165 million of them are below average in their intellect. They're never going to get it. Okay? They might get it eventually if someone tells them and talks real slow. But the media is controlled by six companies. I don't care if you buy a textbook, a newspaper, a movie, anything that you see or read, music, it's all controlled by six companies. These six companies are a cartel. They're part of the cabal. They are controlled and owned by the CIA. And they dance to the CIA's tune, and this has been since Project Mockingbird back in the late 60s.
Well, now let's talk about Fox News, because Fox News is the one outlet that is different. How are they?
Almost.
I know. And so I want you to explain to people how Fox News is being used as a means to, because they are fairly pro-Trump. So what's mm-hmm. going on there, and what kinds of things are they feeding? Are they just not going far? Are they stopping to make us look Looney Tune? Or, I mean, what is going on?
Well, the term is called a limited hangout. And so Fox goes part of the way. They go further than the other guys. So everybody thinks, oh, these guys must be legit. They must be telling the truth because they're supporting Trump and they're saying things that I agree with. Not everything that I agree with, but some things I agree with. So I'm going to watch them and listen to them. And then suddenly you put your trust back in Fox News that they're telling the truth. Well, I'll give you one example where Fox News is not telling the truth. 9/11, Fox News is still telling us that 19 Arabs with box cutters brought down the Twin Towers and blew up the Pentagon.
Oh yeah, they're way on that track, yes.
Yeah, and so they're not doing it. Fox News is still kowtowing to Israel as our best friend and strongest ally in the Middle East. Well, my question I have for people about that is, what the heck has Israel ever done for you? What have they done for the U.S.? Nothing. They're parasites.
Yes. Why are we giving them, what is it, $2 million per person as aid?
Yeah.
Why?
Because we have a large Jewish American constituency out here who virtually are all Sanhedrin. You know what the term is?
No, explain that.
Well, Sanhedrin is a Jew who's not involved in anything nefarious, but will do things for Israel because they support Israel. They support the Jewish cause of Israel. And what I mean by this is this guy might get a call and say, hey, Shlomo, you know, meet me at the bus station tomorrow. I got something for you. I need a favor. Well, what is it? I can't tell you. It's for Israel. Shlomo shows up. They hand him a briefcase. They say, Shlomo, you've got to take this briefcase from New York to Washington, D.C., and a man's going to meet you at the station down there, and just give it to him. Don't ask questions. Don't look inside. Just do it. And the guy will do it. He's a Sanhedrin. And this is a whole class of Jewish Americans out there who will do anything that is asked of them as long as it benefits Israel. That's all you have to tell them, and they'll do it. Because the Jewish Americans are loyal to Israel. I can't say all of them, but many of them have a tremendous loyalty to Israel, which may, in fact, on occasion, be greater than their loyalty to the U.S., even though the U.S. has been very, very kind to them.
Yeah, we've been very kind. In fact, they see us as patsies and morons they can take it. Because I've heard clips of them saying that stuff. Now, the thing that's disturbing, and it's really bad, they always bring up the Holocaust, right? And it's a terrible situation, what happened. And, you know, the whole war was a terrible situation. And no matter how you look at the numbers, there were many people that were killed. But the thing that's so disturbing is there are other groups around the world who have been killed and slaughtered as well. So they're not, while it's terrible and we need to raise our consciousness on the level of not treating anyone like that, they are not unique in that situation.
No, they are not. They are not. But they like to think that they are, because after all, ask them, they'll tell you they are the chosen. Doesn't matter what happens to the Goyim cattle, the humans who are less than them. Only what matters is to them, because they are God's chosen people. But let me point something out to you that's going to give a piece of the puzzle that most Americans aren't aware of. The Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, over the 70 years that the Soviet Union existed, approximately 100 million Russian Christians were murdered, and their assets were stolen from them, and what they used to call collectivization. You no longer have a farm, you no longer have a house. It's been collectivized. It's part of the greater good now. Okay, so keep that in mind. Bolshevism was moving from Russia west into Europe. The only thing that stopped the Bolsheviks from taking over all of Europe was the Nazi Party. And so that is why the Nazis have been so vilified over these years, is because they stopped the Bolsheviks from their larger goal of taking all of Europe. All of it. And that was their goal. And they would have killed another 100 million people in Western Europe. And if you ever ask yourself, why are so many Jews so wealthy? Well, they'll tell you it's because they're great businessmen. You know, that's why. Well, there may be some truth in that. They're predatory in their business practices. But the larger reason why they're so wealthy is because they killed 100 million Russians and stole everything they ever owned. They stole it. That's where collectivization comes in. I mean, people, you can look this up. You know, go back, read about the Soviet Union, read about communism, read about collectivization. That's what they did. They went in and slaughtered millions and millions of people and stole their stuff.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And that's why.
And isn't the largest bankers in the world, Rothschilds and others, are Jewish as well?
Oh, yes.
So yes. It comes from that, is, you know, the international bankers. Are there any international bankers that are Christian or Muslim or anything else?
I have no idea.
I'm just curious.
I have absolutely no idea. Yeah.
Okay, but, so go ahead. You had a point.
Well, the thing is, as Muslims don't believe in usury. And so Muslims have their own set of banking rules. So their banking rules are different. You pay a fee to borrow the money. You don't pay compounding interest. And so that's the difference with the Muslim-based banking versus the Western usury-based banking. Muslims in the Catholic Church believe usury was illegal too, up until, oh God, when was it? My memory.
Until the Vatican Bank took over the Vatican took over all banking, and then they made sure that it wasn't part of the religion.
There was a time when the Vatican did not approve of usury banking, but that time is long past. That's been within the last couple hundred years.
Well, they got big time into banking. Well, now let's talk a little bit about China, because there are some concerns that there are many Muslims that are in camps, re-education camps.
I can talk firsthand about this.
Perfect.
I have a friend Her name was Malika May Abdullah. She was a Chinese Uyghur. And the Uyghurs are the Muslims in the far west of China that are the ones who are being interned and in the camp by the millions. Her sister was married to a guy named Tom Stewart. Tom Stewart has had a company named Food Service of America, based out of Seattle area. He is a multi-billionaire, and he relocated his corporate headquarters down here to Arizona, and was attempting to influence political events in Arizona. Well, this offended the John McCain machine, and Mr. Stewart, his wife, their young daughter, my friend Malika, and two others were killed in a helicopter accident where you had a five-month-old Eurocopter had a blade that disintegrated mid-flight approximately 35 miles north of the airport that they were scheduled to land at. That just strikes me as being, no, that was an engineered event. So Tom Stewart, his entire family, and my friend Malika were all murdered in that event. And this is documented, folks. You can go look it up. Tom Stewart, Phoenix, Arizona. It's happened 6, 8, 10 years ago. But they took him out because he was changing the political climate here in Arizona. It was going to threaten the McCain dynasty that's here. So that's the reason. But the Uyghurs are they're peaceful Muslims. They're a Chinese minority out there. They're genetically different than what the majority of the Chinese people are, which are Han people, H-A-N, and they've got a different bloodline. They're Central Asian. And very nice, you know, they're very, very good to me. And so they're being interned because China perceives them as a threat.
So anybody who's perceived as a threat, they're just going to take out. And this is an example of, now, are they going to kill them or just re-educate them?
First of all, you know, Muslims are very difficult to re-educate. So I think they're probably going to cull them. I don't know. But that would be my best guess.
Wonderful. You know, I suppose that is the history of the world, right? We're looking at empires on a chessboard, and it really does work this way. Now, what can we do as American citizens to help this cause and, you know, to help make this place a better place?
Okay, now, which cause in particular are you talking about? About saying the Uyghurs in China or about...
Let's talk about the United States. How do we make the United States a more peaceful, harmonious country that is a cause for light and good around the world and locally a better place for ourselves?
Withdraw your consent from the system you live in.
And now, what does that mean?
Boy, I've been trying to figure this out. I've been trying to figure out a game plan that I myself can follow.
I know it's hard. I know I'm asking you a very complicated question because I've been working on it too.
We're so locked into things. And, you know, God forbid you don't have a good credit rating. Your FICO score isn't good enough. I mean, you want to talk about a slave system? We're living in a slave system here where that if you don't pay your bills exactly on time on the first of the month, if it's 2 or 3 days late, you lose points on your FICO score. Doesn't matter that you didn't get paid on time. They don't care. They expect you to pay on time regardless. But don't borrow money. Pay off your debt. The best thing you can do. I was just talking to a friend earlier this morning about this, about how all the tax advice that I've ever been given has been bad. You know, I used to make a lot of money before they wiped out my industry and sent it all to China. I was one of those guys making middle six figures, you know, middle six figures, you know, more than three, less than eight.
What did you do?
Six figures. Pardon? I was a captive subcontractor for Motorola, is what I did. I was a semiconductor guy. And anybody who's done their homework realizes that there's no semiconductors in this country anymore. We don't make them here. They're all made in China, except a few Intel holdouts because Intel's smart. They know the Chinese will steal their intellectual property. But just to give you an example of how hard, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, how hard this valley was hit. In 1998, the year that Bill Clinton signed NAFTA, GATT, and all those other, China, the WTO, Motorola had 28,000 people working in this valley, in the Phoenix metro area. 28,000 people paid an average salary, average, half above, half below, of $65,000 a year. Okay, pretty decent money for the late 90s. All right, pretty decent money for today. Once they signed that, by 2003, Motorola no longer had a presence in this valley. They sold off everything. They had over 10 million square feet under roof here, employed 28,000 people. It's gone. It's gone. I can take you to the old Motorola campus on 52nd Street in McDowell. Used to have 11,000 people work there. There's probably 900 people work there now for the company that bought the Motorola assets that were there. They shut down all these things. Those jobs don't exist. All that equipment, all that technology, all that intellectual property and know-how all went to China. It's all there. It's not here anymore. And that's how hard these decisions hit people. Now, how do you replace, you're at a place like Phoenix, Arizona. How do you replace an employer of that magnitude? You don't. You don't grow a new one the next day. It just doesn't happen. And so this valley has been suffering ever since because they lost one of the strongest economic components of their economy here. It's gone, never to come back. So,
well, one of the things that I've been seeing is that manufacturing here in the United States is making a little bit or a decent comeback just because we are focusing on nanotechnology and we're also focusing on automation. And I know it's not a huge amount of jobs that we would like to see from before. It's still a lot of good jobs. It's just not as many, but we're starting to make a comeback in how we're, it's more high tech stuff. But we got to protect that intellectual property and we got to keep moving that direction. But what happens to the people that aren't capable intellectually of being in this new environment?
Well, that is a problem that nobody wants to talk about. In the U.S. here, we've had a permanent underclass since Lyndon Johnson created the War on Poverty in 1965. Okay? We've had families that have been multi-generations living off the welfare system. It's not how things are supposed to be. That's not how it was sold. It was sold to us, the American people. And I was a kid. I was, you know, 10, 11 years old back when they announced the War on Poverty. Well, the War on Poverty has been lost. We've spent over, you know, $3, $4 trillion on it. We got more poor people than ever. And it's been set up as a part of the Democratic system of rewards. So if you support a Democrat candidate, you'll get a job, you'll get a concession, you'll get a contract, something that will keep you making money forever. And you don't have to work real hard to do it. You just have to keep supporting the Democratic candidates. That's all you got to do. So there's this system of political largesse that goes with. I mean, look at Operation Head Start. Remember that?
Yes.
The biggest failure in the history of the U.S. government. But you know what? Still pulling in $25 billion a year in budget. Enough to pay for that wall several times, and it hasn't helped anybody anyway for
there's so many examples of stupid, wasteful things that we do that would pay for the wall over and over.